to it, a T-shaped walking stick in each hand. Clack, 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 clack. God, he hated that sound. His legs ached sickeningly, and he yearned for Novril. Sometimes he thought it would be worth being back with Annie just to have the dope. The doctors had weaned him from it. The booze was his substitute. And when he got inside, he was going to have a double bourbon. Then he would look at the blank screen of his word processor for a while. What fun. Paul Sheldon's $15,000 paperweight. Clack. 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 Now to get the key out of his pocket without dropping either the manila envelope containing the bound galleys or the sticks. He propped the sticks against the wall. While he was doing that, the galleys dropped out from under his arm and fell to the rug. The envelope split open. Shit, he growled. And then the sticks fell over with a clatter, adding to the fun. Paul closed his eyes, swaying unsteadily on his twisted, aching legs, waiting to see if he was going to get mad or cry. He hoped he would get mad. He didn't want to cry out here in the hall, but he might. He had. His legs hurt all the time, and he wanted his dope, not the heavy-duty aspirin they gave him at the hospital dispensary. He wanted his good dope, his antidope. And oh, he was so tired all the time. What he needed to prop him up were not those shitty sticks, but his make-believe games and stories. They were the good dope, the never-fail fix, but they had all fled. It seemed playtime was finally over. This is what it's like after the end, he thought, opening the door and tottering into the apartment. This is why no one ever writes it. It's too fucking dreary. She should have died after I stuffed her head full of blank paper and busted pages. And I should have died then, too. At that moment, if at no other, we really were like characters in one of Annie's chapter plays. No grays, only blacks and whites, good and bad. I was Jeffrey and she was the Burka Bee goddess. This, well, I've heard of denouement, but this is ridiculous. Never mind the mess back there on the floor. Drinky poo first, pick up poo second. First be a don't be, and then be a... He stopped. He had time to realize the apartment was too dark. And there was a smell. He knew that smell. A deadly mixture of dirt and face powder. Annie rose up from behind the sofa like a white ghost, dressed in a nurse's uniform and cap. The axe was in her hand and she was screaming, "Time to rinse, Paul. Time to rinse." He shrieked, tried to turn on his bad legs. She leaped the sofa with clumsy strength, looking like an albino frog. Her starched uniform rustled briskly. The first sweep of the axe did no more than knock the wind from him. This was really what he thought until he landed on the carpet smelling his own blood. He looked down and saw he was cut nearly in half. "Rinse!" she shrieked. And there went his right hand. "Rinse!" she shrieked again, and his left was gone. He crawled toward the open door on the jetting stumps of his wrists, and incredibly the galleys were still there. The bound galleys Charlie had given him at lunch in Mr. Lee's, sliding the manila envelope to him across gleaming white napery, while Muzak drifted down from overhead speakers. "Annie, you can read it now," he tried to scream, but only got out, "Annie, you," before his head flew off and rolled to the wall. His last dimming glimpse of the world was his own collapsing body and Annie's white shoes standing astride it. Goddess, he thought, and died. Scenario: an outline or synopsis, a plot outline, Webster's New Collegiate. Writer: one who writes, especially as an occupation, Webster's New Collegiate. Make-believe: Pretense or pretend. Webster's New Collegiate. Polly. Can you? Yes, of course he could. The writer's scenario was that Annie was still alive, although he understood this was only make-believe. He really did go to lunch with Charlie Merrill. All the conversation was the same. Only when he let himself into his apartment, he knew it was the cleaning woman who had pulled the drapes, and although he fell down and had to smother a scream of fright, when Annie rose up like Cain from behind the sofa, it was just the cat. A cross-eyed Siamese named Dumpster he had gotten last month at the pound. There was no Annie, because Annie had not been a goddess at all. Only a crazy lady who had hurt Paul for reasons of her own. Annie had managed to pull most of the paper out of her mouth and throat, and had gotten out through Paul's window while Paul was sleeping the sleep of drugs. She had gotten to the barn and had collapsed there. She was dead when Wicks and McKnight found her, but not of strangulation. She had actually died of the fractured skull she had received when she struck the mantel, and she had struck the mantel because she had tripped. So in a way she had been killed by the very typewriter Paul had hated so much. But she'd had plans for him, all right. Not even the axe would suffice this time. They had found her outside of Misery the Pig's stall, with one hand wrapped around the handle of her chainsaw. That was all in the past, though. Annie Wilkes was in her grave. But like Misery Chastain, she rested there uneasily. In his dreams and waking fantasies, he dug her up again and again. You couldn't kill the goddess. Temporarily dope her with bourbon, maybe, but that was all. He went to the bar, looked at the bottle, then looked back at where his galleys and walking sticks lay. He gave the bottle a goodbye look and worked his way back to his stuff. Rinse. Half an hour later, he was sitting in front of the blank screen, thinking he had to be a glutton for punishment. He had taken the aspirin instead of the drink, but that didn't change what was going to happen now. He was going to sit here for 15 minutes or maybe half an hour, looking at nothing but a cursor flashing in darkness. Then he was going to turn the machine off and have that drink. Except he had seen something funny on the way home from lunch with Charlie, and it had given him an idea. Not a big one, just a small one. After all, it had only been a small incident. Just a kid pushing a shopping cart up 48th Street, that was all. But there had been a cage in the cart, and in it had been a rather large furry animal which Paul at first thought was a cat. A closer look had shown him a wide white stripe up the cat's back. "Sonny," he said, "is that a skunk?" "Yeah," the kid said, and pushed the shopping cart along a little faster. He didn't stop long for conversations with people in the city, especially weird-looking guys with bags the size of Samsonite two-suiters under the eyes, who were lurching along on metal walking sticks. The kid turned the corner and was gone. Paul went on, wanting to take a cab, but he was supposed to walk at least a mile every day, and this was his mile, and it hurt like hell. And to take his mind off the mile, he started wondering where that kid had come from, where the shopping cart had come from, and most of all, where the skunk had come from. He heard a noise behind him and turned from the blank screen to see Annie coming out of the kitchen, dressed in jeans and a red flannel logger shirt, a chainsaw in her hand. He closed his eyes, opened them, saw the same old nothing, and was suddenly angry. He turned back to the word processor and wrote fast, almost bludgeoning the keys. 1. The kid heard a sound in the back of the building, and although the thought of rats crossed his mind, he turned the corner anyway. It was too early to go home because school didn't let out for another hour and a half, and he had gone truant at lunch. What he saw crouched back against the wall in a dusty shaft of sunlight was not a rat, but a great big black cat with the bushiest tail he had ever seen. He stopped, heart suddenly pounding. Polly, can you? This was a question which he did not dare answer. He bent over the keyboard again, and after a moment began to hit the keys, but more gently now. It wasn't a cat. Eddie Desmond had lived in New York City all his life, but he had been to the Bronx Zoo, and Christ, there were picture books, weren't there? He knew what that thing was, although he hadn't the slightest idea how such a thing could have gotten into his deserted East 105th Street tenement. But the long white stripe down its back was a dead giveaway. It was a skunk. Eddie started slowly toward it, feet gritting in the plaster dust. He could. He could. So in gratitude and terror, he did. The hole opened, and Paul stared through at what was there, unaware that his fingers were picking up speed, unaware that his aching legs were in the same city but 50 blocks away, unaware that he was weeping as he wrote. Lovell, Maine, September 23, 1984, Bangor, Maine, October 7, 1986. Now my tale is told.
Misery was written by Stephen King and read by Lindsay Krauss. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.